May 20th, 2011 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And today, of course, is since it's Friday at 3, it's time for the Federal News Countdown. And if all of the talk that's going around turns out to be true, it'll be the last Federal News Countdown in history. So the pressure is on both me and my guests to make it a really good one. My guests include Bob Otto of Agilex. It's great to see you again. Thanks for being on the show.
Great to be back.
Can you handle the pressure?
I don't know. One more day.
Well, that's true. An hour from now, and then 24 hours from now, it really won't matter if all of this is true. And John Salamone of Federal Management Partners is here. And John, of course, formerly of the Chief Human Capital Officers Council. It's great to see you.
Great to see you too, Francis.
You look very cool, calm, and collected. You don't look like you're sweating it at all. Otto looks like he's a little bit worked up about all of this, but...
I'm not sweating it too bad yet, so
okay.
We'll see.
Well, I think you're going to be fine. We have a great countdown. You've chosen terrific stories, both of you. And, of course, we'll start with...
Number three!
The third most important federal news story of the week from John Salamone is a Washington Post story with the headline, "For Vietnamese Family, an Emotional Rescue and Reunion." And I have to confess, when I first read this, I had seen the story, and I wasn't quite sure where you were going here with the federal angle on this. Talk about it.
Well, let's definitely talk about it. And, Francis, thanks again for having me on the show. I really appreciate it, Bob. It's nice to meet you, and looking forward to sharing our stories together.
Absolutely.
So as I sit down usually on Sunday mornings, I love to read stories that have heartwarming spin to them and kind of reaffirming the power of the human spirit. And as you mentioned, there was a good story about a Navy captain named Corwin Bell, who in 1982 spotted an overcrowded fishing boat that was dangerously close to sinking off the coast of Vietnam. And defying the orders, Captain Bell picked up 52 men, women, and children on this rickety fishing boat and took them to the Philippines. And the story really focuses on Captain Bell and one of the families that he rescued that day. The mother, and I probably will not do a very good job with the pronunciation, but the mother, Tien Vu, had a baby daughter while she was in the Philippines named Than. And it turns out that, you know, some 30 years later, Than tracked down Captain Bell on the internet, told her story to him. He completely and totally remembered. And she said, you know, "You changed the trajectory of my life." It turns out that Than is a graduate of GW Law School, living here in D.C., just took a job at a D.C. law firm. And I think the point really is that, you know, there, with everything going on in the world, from the war to financial crisis to scandals, we need more stories like this. Mm-hmm. You know, Captain Bell went above and beyond the call of duty and rescued 52 men, women, and children, and had a significant impact on this family's life. And there are stories that are like that out there on federal employees, on our military men, service men and women. And it really just was very heartwarming and very touching, very wonderful story.
The line in the story that you're referring to about what happened to him, I thought was particularly interesting. I'm hearing what I think this might have sounded like in my head. He was subtly rebuked, he said, but not heavily disciplined
Yes.
for his actions.
Yes.
And I think I can imagine some of his superiors, knowing some folks who are Navy men and women, what that might have sounded like, and it fits with the gist of the story.
Most definitely. And, you know, as a student of leadership, it's fascinating how we always learn from our experiences. And he had said he was second in command on another ship where they turned away a similar sort of situation where they just gave food to individuals who were on a boat and didn't pick them up. And mm-hmm. I think, you know, that kind of had a really big impact on him when he was – now commander of the ship, I think he just said, "Forget it. I'm just going to do it, and regardless of the consequences."
Got to do what you got to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
The number three story by John Salamone this week is from the Washington Post, and it is headlined, "For Vietnamese Family, an Emotional Rescue and Reunion." Bob Otto, your story number three is our Jason Miller story, headlined, "OPM Touts Transformation of Federal Hiring." Finally, some good news in the hiring chain when it comes to getting people, talent into agencies.
Absolutely. You know, the OPM came out with this update of how they were streamlining this hiring process from moving away from the KSAs to a traditional resume. And so they talked about how they've achieved a 15% reduction from 120 days to 105 days and headed towards that 80-day target. But, you know, there's a lot of people out there who don't feel that it has gotten better.
Hmm.
Okay, but I applaud OPM for this effort. What I think that I'd like to point out is really two things here. One is you don't really realize how tough it is to achieve change management across the federal government, which is what this is. I mean, if you think about this, OPM held 350-plus training sessions, trained 20,000 managers, and to date, they've achieved 15% reduction on an average. I mean, think about this. At a macro level, you can make a major change at a high level in government, but then when you cascade that down into the agencies, there's so many back-end systems that have to change and processes that it really is a major effort to change in the federal government. But I don't want to lose sight of another point here is that improving the mechanics of the hiring is one thing, but I don't believe we've done enough to attract the young people into government. And this is one of the areas where I believe that we need those agile leaders in government for the future, because without them, you know, this is not going to work.
Our resident HR expert, John Salamone, is nodding his head in agreement, and we'll talk about this more in the next segment because John's number two story ties into this. But there's another element here that I want to bring up when we come back, too, and it's something you and I have talked about before, and that's culture. And the role that culture plays in trying to change some of these structures and the way people do business. And we'll get into that a little bit more. Bob Otto's story number two in the countdown is our Jason Miller story, headlined OPM Touts Transformation of Federal Hiring. And you can find it and all of the stories on the Federal News Countdown this week linked up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. We'll continue the countdown with the number two story of the week, the second most important federal news story as selected by John Salamone and Bob Otto, when the Federal News Countdown continues on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
It's the only program of its kind in the world. A unique opportunity to help strengthen our country's defense and further your career. The National Defense Executive MBA at George Mason University's School of Management. The only executive MBA degree tailored to developing leaders and managers in the U.S. defense industry. A unique combination of high-caliber executive business education, defense industry-specific knowledge, and hands-on learning designed to accelerate your career in the military, government, and corporate defense sectors. All without the career interruption of a traditional degree. Learn more at som.gmu.edu/defense. That's som.gmu.edu/defense. Do it today, because the last day to apply for the fall semester is July 15th. The National Defense Executive MBA at George Mason University, helping our country's defense, advancing your career.
The ComSatCom report, provided by Hughes.
It doesn't take a disaster or cyber attack to knock out a terrestrial communications network. One simple construction error or backhoe cut can do it. A diverse path satellite backup solution to a primary landline network is essential to ensure continuity of operations, or COOP, to keep defense networks running no matter the situation. National programs must have a COOP backup for terrestrial connections with inherent security functions to protect voice, video, and data transmissions. Hughes Defense Solutions meet U.S. TRANSEC and FIPS 140-2 Security Level 2 standards for secure global connectivity wherever your mission may take you. Hughes has the technology and experience to deliver the right COOP solutions on time and on budget.
To learn more about Hughes Defense Solutions and contract vehicles, visit today's complete ComSatCom report on federalnewsradio.com or visit Hughes on the web at defense.hughes.com.
And now Ask the CIO, brought to you by Vion Corporation.
Malcolm Jackson is the Environmental Protection Agency's Assistant Administrator in the Office of Environmental Information and Chief Information Officer. He says the agency's IT projects have come under a lot of scrutiny.
We've conducted our own tech stats, and I've gone through almost all of the 21 projects to date, and we look very hard at cybersecurity, architecture reviews, sequencing, and ensuring that we're meeting the needs of the agency as a a whole.
CIOs and IT directors, is your network-attached storage infrastructure out of control? Do you have dozens and dozens of NAS appliances that are difficult to administer? Ask the experts at Vion Corporation how Hitachi's high-performance NAS, powered by BlueArc, can consolidate your NAS infrastructure, reduce your number of NAS appliances, and improve your NAS performance. With a 30-year partnership, Vion and Hitachi Data Systems have been bringing you innovative technologies with quality service. Visit Vion.com to learn more. That's Vion.com.
I'm Amy Morris. Here's a look at Monday morning's Federal Drive. Why doesn't your agency use an IPA? We'll tell you what it is and bust some myths about how an IPA works. And we'll talk with an economic advisor to the Obama administration about how the budget debates and debt ceiling could impact your paycheck. That and more Monday morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. For all the latest federal news, check out federalnewsradio.com.
Headed to Fort Detrick or the I-270 Technology Corridor, Federal News Radio can be heard crystal clear on 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. It's the same great station, just on an added frequency. Get the latest news about the federal government and government contractors. Hear exclusive interviews with the movers and shakers in the federal arena. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM or 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. Federal News Radio, your source for federal news now.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown, where we count down the three most important federal news stories of the week as chosen by experts in the world of the federal government. This week it's John Salamone and Bob Otto on the countdown, and we're up to
number two.
Second most important federal news story of the week, according to John Salamone, is from the Washington Post. The headline is, 1 year of federal hiring reforms, is it any better? And it kind of piggybacks with Bob's story number three, all of which are linked up at federalnewsradio.com. What do you take away as an HR guy from what you're seeing in the transformation that's happened, not just in the past year, to be fair, over the past several years back to even toward the end of the Bush administration?
Yeah, when I was with the Chief Human Capital Officer Council, we actually worked on the end-to-end hiring model with our hiring subcommittee, which really became the platform that and the launching pad for this administration to engage in their hiring reform initiatives. And like Bob said, I think tremendous progress has been made. 96% of the job announcements now no longer require KSAs. And I really agree with what Bob said as well, that, you know, just because we're doing things on a government-wide scale doesn't mean that it's going to filter down to the agencies. And going from, you know, 120 or 130 days down to 105 in a year is a great accomplishment. I think in a tight budget environment, when we have a lot of all of these other initiatives going on, talking about pay freezes and whatnot, I think what really becomes critical is timing, yes, is important, but Francis, I've talked to you on your show about this in the past, that we really need to look at the quality of the applicants that we're getting. So if we have an 80-day hiring model and we're just pinning our hopes on that 80-day, but we hire the wrong person in 80 days and they leave in 6 months, would it have been better if we spent 90, 95 days to get the right person in the door?
Well, or worse, if they turn into one of the people that people think of when they think of federal bureaucrats who should have been there for 6 months and winds up being there for a career. That's even worse.
Right.
If you're not identifying the right people coming in the door.
Yep.
Is there too much effort, do you think, being paid to the quantity versus the quality, John?
No, I think that, you know, it's the balance. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I read Director Barry's remarks, and I know that he brought up the quality applicant as part of the hiring process. And I think right now the main focus is just that timeliness, because really it is a disservice to, you know, the American citizens that apply for federal jobs to be waiting 6 months to be hired or to wait 6 months to hear nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So really, you know, they're taking the time to fill out the federal applications. They should be streamlining the process to help get people in the door faster. But we also at the same time have to be very finicky about the quality of the applicants that we're getting as well.
Mm-hmm. Especially at a time like now, Bob, when there are more people applying for federal jobs than ever before, and people attribute it to the economy and uncertainty in the private sector job market and so on, it would seem to me now would be a time that you could really afford to be pickier than normal.
you get one shot at hiring a really good resource for a career, and you need to have a process that supports doing that, getting a quality person.
One of the things that you talked about earlier is the idea of bringing young people in and making sure that we're appealing to a younger generation of people. A lot of times the focus of that conversation is around technology, and I wonder if that's really the only thing. It seems like sometimes it's the only thing that people are thinking about and not really considering all of the possibilities, answering all of the potential wants and needs that a college graduate has when it comes to finding a job or a career.
I think that when I started to work, I was looking for a career. And I think now the younger generation is looking for a challenge. And the challenge may end up being 2 or 3 years and they move on. See, I believe that in my career, I had really two jobs. And in, let's say, my daughter's career or the younger people's career, they're going to have 10, 12, 15 jobs in their career, in essence. Mm-hmm. So I think that we're going to have to deal with the younger generation a little bit different than my generation.
Do you think hiring managers and HR people in government are prepared for that kind of switch? Has that pivot happened, John?
Well, I think they should be prepared. And I mean, even, you know, my generation, I spent 17 years in the federal government, and I think it's to the benefit for individuals to kind of meander in and out of federal service and over the variety of their careers. And once you're in federal service, it's not just staying at one agency. You can go anywhere within the space, and find a job that you have an incredible attachment to the mission and to the organization. And if you don't like an organization, there's always another agency or another sub-agency or department that you can go to. But I think that agencies need to think more strategically about that and not worry so much if they're losing people after 2 or 3 years and those people are coming back in 3, 4, or 5 years with different experiences. So I think that is a good thing. But if they're losing and their exit interview survey say that they came to the office and they didn't have a computer, they didn't have a phone, they didn't know who their boss was, they never had any access to any sort of exciting work, then it is a disservice. Mm-hmm. And I think agencies are there in that situation, they really need to pay attention to what's going on in their organization.
I absolutely agree with it.
John Salamone, story number 2 is from the Washington Post. The headline is 1 year of federal hiring reforms. Is it any better? And I guess I'll pay the ultimate tribute to the headline writer by stealing his or her work and asking you, are things better a year later, John? Yes, no, maybe so?
I think they are better, but I think there's more work that needs to be done, and I think there's a recognition from that in this administration, and they're going to continue to beat the drum, and they should, and I'm glad to see that they're out talking about these things.
I worry about this as we cross these administrations, that programs like this that are trying to improve things, they get sometimes terminated or lost. And, I think that Barry has a great program here that they need to continue on, and it's going to be beyond 2 more years. So clearly, if this is going to be successful across government, this is going to be part of the day-to-day way things are done.
Yep. Well, and I'll qualify the statement by saying there is no indication whatsoever that Director Barry plans to go anywhere, but he's almost at his expiration date because he's been in the position for almost 2 years now. So he's already beyond the average lifespan of the political appointee. So somebody will be coming along after him at some point, whether it's with this administration or another one. So that's also a point where sometimes initiatives can lose steam, even within the same administration.
Yeah, and I had a GAO report back from the late 80s, and you could read about the hiring process, and it reads like it reads today.
Uh-huh.
It needs to be streamlined. We need to be better about our applicants and so on and so forth. But the one thing is that, again, this is an issue that transitioned from the Bush administration to the Obama administration, using that end-to-end hiring platform as that springboard. So I'm hoping that the next administration comes in, will pick up where this administration leaves off whenever it, transitions out.
So. Yeah, I agree with that.
Story number 2 on the Federal News Countdown from John Salamone. It's a Washington Post story headline, 1 year of federal hiring reforms. Is it any better? You can read the whole story at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, where it is linked up. Also linked up there, story number 2 from Bob Otto, and we'll talk about it next on the Federal News Countdown on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on Federal News Radio at 10 a.m. This week, my special guest is Ava Abramowitz, author of Architect's Guide to Negotiating and teacher of negotiation at GW University Law School. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by Odin, Feldman, and Pittleman, a full-service law firm located in Fairfax, Virginia, serving the D.C. metro area. Check us out on the web at www.ofplaw.com.
You want to win government business, but so do your competitors. How do you gain the competitive edge? By using Deltek's solutions to identify the right opportunities, assemble the right teams, and capture the right contracts. Only Deltek provides access to the nation's largest government opportunity database, essential market intelligence, and top teaming partners. Visit Deltek.com/gov to see why 98 of the top 100 contractors win more with Deltek. Deltek. Know more. Do more.
If sitting at a desk, working at a computer, or drinking coffee was a good workout, most of us would be in awesome shape. Unfortunately, they aren't. But that doesn't mean if you're behind a desk, you can't go move around some. Kaiser Permanente suggests organizing a lunchtime walking group. Nothing revolutionary, just a group of coworkers that walk every day at lunch. It doesn't matter where. What matters is the walking. Just 30 minutes a day. Studies show that employees who move around and get exercise feel less stressed, lose weight, and lower their risk for chronic conditions. When employers choose Kaiser Permanente, the walking group is just one of the many ideas and tools that we provide to help employees stay healthier and more productive. Find out how a Kaiser Permanente plan can help your employees and your business thrive. Go to kp.org/thrive9to5.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
I'm an emergency physician, so I have to be prepared for anything. One night, a patient found a newborn baby in a toilet in the hospital. She rushed him to the ER. The baby wasn't breathing, so I began to resuscitate him. That baby recovered, and he's 5 now, doing great, and I still visit him every year.
Emergency medicine is critical at any hour of any day, and it's less than 2% of the nation's healthcare dollar. Visit www.acep.org, paid for by the American College of Emergency Physicians.
Nano, or very small, materials are finding their way into products from cosmetics to medicines. Are we ready for them in our food? Nanotechnology might allow more control over how our bodies use food, says Rod Hill of the University of Idaho.
These are materials that a physicist can make or an engineer can make, and the scale that they make those materials at, this nanoscale, is almost identical to the scale of the molecules that occur in our bodies.
Hill says tiny structures might be designed to hold on to certain food chemicals that provide taste but little nutrition, letting them just pass through your body.
You could actually get the same flavor sensation, but with a whole lot less of that stuff that's actually bad for you.
Hill says much more research is needed, though, to determine both the best way to make such products and any health implications. To find out more, go to nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
How will federal managers improve program performance within the tight budget environment? Find out from Agency Leaders at Excellence in Government, the premier best practices conference for federal managers, May 23rd at the Ronald Reagan Building. Early bird rates are available through April 29th. Don't miss the event that federal managers say best prepares them to excel. Register now at excel.gov.com.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It is the Federal News Countdown every Friday in the 3 o'clock hour. Two people who are experts in the world of the federal government come in and talk about the news stories they've chosen from the previous week that are the three most important federal news stories in their view. My experts this week are Bob Otto of Agilex and John Salamone of Federal Management Partners. And Bob, your story number two is from Fierce Government IT. The headline is Federal CIOs Struggling to Balance Agility and Governance. Now, it just so happens that you work for a company named Agilex, but agility as a concept is just all over the place, not just in IT, but in general, in program management and project management and government. What is the balance here that this article is talking about?
Well, they're really talking about managing projects. But, you know, if you really want to be agile in an organization, go back and take a look at all your processes. You're probably going to find they're bureaucratic, probably been created 10, 15 years ago. They can be streamlined and simplified and automated, and you can make things more agile in your company very easily. But the major focus of this, I really found this is an interesting story. This really supports the OMB 25-point IT reform program on how do you change managing major IT projects and delivering them on time. And instead of creating these multi-year sequential programs, what OMB is recommending and pushing is for agencies to embrace these more iterative projects that are executed in a series of six-month projects. They also want to ensure, too, that the IT people stay close to the business. And as you can imagine, this change here is a real challenge for many to make that transition. Well, think about this. The procurement system in itself is based on this waterfall process of development with deliverables in a sequential order. And what this means is you're often creating additional work simply to just check off the box of the contract, and it may not even meet the requirements of what you need today. These agile approaches are predicated on rapid decision making, and that's one of the great strengths of it. And as such, these program managers who manage these projects need to be fully engaged as a true stakeholder. And, you know, it's not surprising that not all the program managers feel very comfortable about making this transition to this role. So what I would say here is if you develop things using this agile, responsive governance model, you can make this happen using Agile Scrum, set expectations and the challenges, and you can report things and resolve them daily, and you can get rid of these roadblocks and be successful. And as you said before, at Agilex, we implement a lot of our programs using the Agile Scrum methodology, and it can be very successful.
I think of an Agile Scrum, and I think of a whole bunch of people jumping on top of each other trying to get a rugby ball, but that's just me. You're nodding your head in agreement as Bob's talking about some of these things, John.
Yeah, most definitely. I think, you know, some of the things that jump out at me when I read an article like this, I mean, the federal government really is risk-averse to a lot of things, and it's difficult to govern. I mean, there are a lot of stakeholders. You've got OMB, you've got GAO, you've got Congress, you've got the media. All of these stakeholders that look at these multi-million dollar projects, IT projects, and we'll use IT just because of the subject matter of the article, but, you know, going to a more incremental approach where you're looking and tracking your performance over a series of, definite increments makes complete and total sense. And instead of, you know, setting the stage for maybe a $50 million IT project, maybe that's your overarching goal, but you break it off into $5 million increments. And it seems to me, I'm not an IT person, but going to more of like a performance-based contract or that mm-hmm. sort of an environment mm-hmm. makes perfect sense.
Mm-hmm. Does agile development work for every single kind of project? I'm thinking of maybe projects that are so large, that are so expensive, and that are so complex that maybe even a 12 to an 18-month deliverable isn't necessarily reasonable for a vendor to be able to produce.
Yes.
Or maybe the point is to get away from those kinds of things.
Actually, you need to get away from creating requirements that take years to create and then throwing them over the fence to an IT organization and then expect them to turn them overnight. Mm-hmm. You need to develop your requirements and start developing those solutions in these 1 week, 2 weeks, and 30-day increments.
Do you see progress in the requirements process molding itself to fit? Because that's a different mentality in the requirements process than what we've been used to.
I see many successes over at VA with Roger Baker on this, and with Chapter 33, I see Homeland Security being successful, the Intel areas. This can work very well for people.
What's the key to getting people to understand that it can work? Is it just seeing the success stories, or is there something else, or is it going to come down to, at some point in time, somebody like Vivek Kundra saying, this is not guidance anymore, this is standard operating procedure, you have to work this way?
Well, he has pretty much given, through this reform program, the I would call it more than guidance. It's more to we're going to move this way.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, experienced people, training and mentoring can help get you there.
Bob Otto's story number two on the Federal News Countdown this week is from Fierce Government IT. The headline is Federal CIOs Struggling to Balance Agility and Governance, and you can read it at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. We're up to the number one story of the week on the Federal News Countdown, as chosen by Bob Otto and by John Salamone. We'll talk about them when we come back on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
NBC News Radio, I'm Tom Costello. Little progress to report on a move toward Israeli-Palestinian peace talks after a White House meeting today between President Obama and Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. First, the President.
Israel's security will remain paramount in U.S. evaluations of any prospective peace deal.
And Prime Minister Netanyahu.
It cannot go back to the 1967 lines because these lines are indefensible.
President Obama had called on Israel to do just that, change their borders back to 1967 lines. Other news, NASA has set July 8th as the target date for the final space shuttle launch. Atlantis will be carrying a final load of supplies and equipment for the International Space Station. Stocks are sliding on signs that U.S. consumer demand may be weakening. Shares of the Gap plunged after it cut its earnings forecast for the year. The Dow is down 46. More news at MSNBC.com. I'm Tom Costello, NBC News Radio.
Are you being audited? Have you not filed tax returns for years? Is the IRS coming to your home or place of business? The IRS will relentlessly pursue you for unpaid taxes. I'm Patrick Cox, founder of Taxmasters. Listen, don't take on the IRS by yourself. Our former IRS agents and tax professionals have helped many good people just like you. Don't wait weeks for an appointment. Call Taxmasters right now to get started. Call 1-800-307-4310. That's 1-800-307-4310. Or go to txmstr.com.
Could switching to Geico really save you 15% or more on car insurance? Is texting getting way out of hand? You know, I can't... Oh, please. Oh, that is funny. Where was I? Oh, yes, about texting. Pardon me. LOL, you are my BFF. So, like I was saying...
Switch to Geico now and you could save hundreds on your car insurance. For a free rate quote, visit geico.com to see how much you could save. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
The Government IT Solutions Spotlight is brought to you by CDWG.
Defense Department employees will soon log onto their classified network using a new approach. DoD Chief Information Officer Terry Takai wants employees to log onto the CIPRNet using public key infrastructure certificates. The Defense Information Systems Agency is among the first in DoD to make this a reality. Henry Sikowitz is the DISA CIO. He says about 50% of the agency's employees already use PKI certificates instead of usernames and passwords.
Desktops, tablets, smartphones, thin clients. If you're in federal IT, these are your challenges. Visit cdwg.com/configuration to learn how our experts can help you meet them all with configured, imaged, asset-tagged client computing solutions. CDWG. People who get it.
Visit CDWG.com to learn how HP's Blade Technology and Blade System Matrix can help you increase productivity and the capacity of your data center.
Don't miss the FPMI Human Capital Management Conference and Expo, June 13th through 16th in Tucson. After 22 years, FPMI has combined their Labor and Employee Relations Conference with their HR and EEO Conference to bring you one conference covering today's hot topics in the federal LR, ER, HR, and EEO fields. Over 70 sessions led by government leaders and industry experts. Join FPMI for 3 days of learning, networking, and exhibits. To register, visit FPMIconferences.com. That's FPMIconferences.com.
Tom Tamman and Amy Morris, weekday mornings 6 to 10.
That leaves about a third of Americans over the age of 15 who've never been married.
30%, yeah.
Those figures come from a report with a romantic title called, ready? Oh, this is hot. Number, Timing, and Duration of Marriages and Divorces 2009.
Well, they put no emotion in this report.
The Federal Drive with Tom Tamman and Amy Morris, weekday mornings 6 to 10.
Federal News Radio in a Web 2.0 world. Find Federal News Radio on Facebook and Twitter. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/FedNewsRadio or join the Federal News Radio group on Facebook. Chat with our team and make connections with others in the federal arena. Email us at fnrcomment@federalnewsradio.com. Visit our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
We're back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It is the Federal News Countdown, and the experts counting down the news stories that they've chosen for the countdown this week are Bob Otto of Agilex, the former Chief Information Officer of the Postal Service, and John Salamone, Federal Management Partners, formerly the Chief Human Capital Officers Council. And as we get up to
number one,
the most important federal news stories of the week as chosen by both men are similar enough that we'll talk about them together. John Salamone, your number one's from the Post. The headline is Federal Worker Pensions Emerge as Target in Debt Reduction Talks. And Bob, your number one story is from GovExec. The headline simply Paying for It. Both of them having to do with the pay and benefits packages that federal employees have. The good news, I guess, about all of this is that, Bob, you reminded me right before we went back on the air that if the predictions are right, after tomorrow, none of us will have to worry about any of this stuff.
Yeah, I don't think that we're going to have to worry much.
Won't matter. It'll be the end of the world, and that's that.
But the good news is we were on your last broadcast.
That's right.
But the bad news is there will be no record of it.
Okay.
Well, that's a fair... That's a great point, John. I hadn't really thought of that now that you mentioned it. I'm not sure how I feel about that.
Francis, I'm sorry. Maybe I'll just leave.
Well, you don't have to worry about coming back, I guess.
Oh, okay.
I mean, right. but neither do any of us. So this whole, we were talking a little bit during the break. The whole deal about the, maybe attack is too strong of a word, maybe it's not. Your opinions are welcome on that concept. On what federal employees receive as far as pay and benefits is not just a big story this week. It's an ongoing story. We've got ongoing coverage on it on our bill tracker at federalnewsradio.com. I'll tell you a little bit more about that in a few moments. But this story is big in our community, and yet when it comes to the actual impact that it will have on the deficit and on the debt, it seems to me that the numbers don't bear out all of the outrage and angst and coverage. Do you think, Bob?
No, I don't think so. In fact, I think that the federal workers are under this incredible pressure. They've been almost demoralized for the last, seems like, 20 years. They keep getting picked on, and you know, at one point they were overpaid, and then they weren't productive, et cetera. And now it seems like they're going through what I term is a death by a thousand cuts, you know. And so I really think that the federal worker is picked on, and they shouldn't be picked on at this point in time. I do believe that everything is fair game and in budgets, reviews. But it seems like we're coming back to them more and more than we should.
The thing that I think is really weird about this, too, is it was not 15 or 20 minutes ago that we were having the conversation. Federal government needs to be selective. They do specialized things. They do things of great import to the country, best and brightest, and all of that routine. And then we turn around and we say, but while we're doing that, what's available to the people who do that should be at the greatest, equal to the private sector. And some people think, well, it should be below that because it's the taxpayer dollar and all that. So I don't see how you balance both sides of that. Do you, John?
No, I don't either. And I think the one thing that I'm really concerned about, and it'll be very interesting to see this year, right now the employee viewpoint survey is open, and it closes at the end of this month. So we've had the last 6 months of stories about Congress freezing pay. I'm a non-essential worker. Federal employees are the enemy. They're overpaid, whatever. So now federal employees are reading those sorts of articles on a daily basis and now looking at things like, you know, having our pensions targeted as debt reduction. All of those things have an impact on morale. And we need to be very mindful and look very carefully at what impact that's having. And thankfully, we've got indicators that are going to tell us what kind of an impact these stories are having through the Federal Employee Viewpoint Survey. If morale indicators go down, I guarantee you can target these types of stories in this type of environment to directly to that.
I want to give a shout out to all of my colleagues here, but also to my competitors in the federal media space who have, I think, done a very good job of covering thoroughly and honestly the issues that are going on here. What I'm discouraged about is that there are people who have vested interests on one side or the other, or who are just choosing to be ignorant about what's going on. I have received a number of emails this week, some of them to the effect of, why are they borrowing money from my G fund for the debt ceiling to fund that? Why are they using my retirement for collateral? No shred of accuracy in that at all. There are things bouncing around on the internet. Some of the things that Mike Causey has gotten in comments on his columns and so on. There really is a lot of misinformation floating around about some of these things on top of what federal employees see as legitimate challenges and legitimate issues with some of the things that they have to deal with.
The challenges facing the federal worker have never been really tougher. I mean, they want workers to do more with less, and when people leave, they don't want to fill some of the jobs, and the expectations of a federal worker are higher. I worked for 38 years in the federal government, and I worked with some really great and some smart people, and I worked in the public sector, and, you know, I found some great and smart people there. I really don't see some of the things that they're saying about some of the people, but I'm sure there's still a small percent of people who aren't the most stellar, et cetera. But, you know, one of the things I worry about here is that we're creating a culture and, you know, that where the federal employee can't excel in all this by some of the demoralizing comments that we make. And, you know, there's sort of a real contradiction here. How do we desire to have the best and brightest, but how do we encourage them with the actions and the words we take? So
the discussion that I have not seen anywhere, and I'm surprised it hasn't been talked about much yet, is the whole idea, I think, from a managerial perspective of more with less is not the right discussion to be having. Every managerial expert I've ever talked to on the show says that idea never works. Because people, as you were talking about, John, about being demoralized, people say, well, this isn't realistic for me. I'm working at a pace and a speed and a capacity that's commensurate with what I'm being paid, what my expectations are, and the resources I'm being given to do the job, or I would be dissatisfied already and would have already moved on. And so the idea of asking people to do more on top of that, I think, is a little odd. What I haven't heard anybody talk about is the possibility of approaching this as a do less with less. If we have fewer resources and we're going to ultimately have fewer people, then they should be expected to do fewer things. And nobody seems to want to talk about that, whether it's politically or operationally or managerial or whatever. It doesn't seem like anybody's willing to go there.
No, and I don't think that's a losing proposition, doing less with less. I think what we really need to think about, though, is do we have the right size of the federal workforce? Do we have the right people? Are the agencies focusing on mission critical programs and procedures? If you've got a mission critical program in one agency and another agency is doing the exact same thing, but it's not mission critical, why is that agency doing that work if it's not mission critical?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I think it's a fundamental look, really deep look at how we structure federal programs, how we align our goals, our outcomes, our objectives, our performance indicators with the mission of the agency, and maybe then we can do more with less if we're structured appropriately. But I don't think that we're there yet, and I think that it is all of these things that are going on right now and all of the talk about pay freezes and everything that's mentioned in the articles that Bob picked out today and then the article that I had as my number one, they do have a negative impact on federal employees, and we need to be very mindful of that.
Mm-hmm.
We seem to be a culture, though, that when we build a program over the time, we never want to turn it off. And, you know, a program may have been good 20 years ago, but maybe it's outlived its purpose. But we don't want to turn it off.
We don't want to turn it off, and there are a number of reasons why that can be. And I think part of that is Congress. And Congress doesn't want to give up programs because it means jobs for their agent or for their districts.
Let's talk more about this when we come back. We'll take a quick break and wrap up our Federal News Countdown on Federal News Radio 1500 AM with John Salamone and Bob Otto in just a moment.
Federal Broadband Minute, provided by Hughes.
If your agency's communications network was tailored to your needs, what would it look like? Would your small and medium-sized field offices connect to the cloud and run applications with optimal bandwidth efficiency? Would your ideal network be cost-effective and able to leverage the benefits of GSA programs? Would it provide path-diverse communications that support COOP for the same price as your primary network service? And with your network, would you have confidence in secure connectivity, especially for teleworkers? Say yes to all these questions and meet the Government Field Office of the Future today from Hughes. With decades of experience and a comprehensive suite of solutions and partners, Hughes is able to deliver agencies a powerful national managed broadband service, providing voice, video, and data where, when, and how you need it.
To learn more, visit government.hughes.com/WFED.
Here's Mike Mestrovich, Senior Technology Officer for the Solutions Director for Information Management and CIO of the DIA, on the Federal Executive Forum on Virtualization and Data Center Consolidation, sponsored by Red Hat.
We actually see virtualization and data center consolidation as an enhancement to security. Simply from the physical component, if I only have to worry about a smaller number of data centers, well, then my security footprint is reduced to those smaller number of centers. And actually, with the same security dollars, I can focus more intentionally on the security that I want to provide to those facilities.
To listen to the whole program made possible by the Trezza Media Group, log on to FederalNewsRadio.com.
There are a lot of virtualization solutions out there from proprietary companies, but they are expensive and lock you into long-term relationships with vendors that you might not want. But Red Hat Enterprise Virtualization is a highly secure, open-source platform for mission-critical workloads. Red Hat technology is based on open standards, so your IT future still belongs to you. And if you're ready to start cloud computing, this is the way to do it. 90% of public clouds already run on open source. This is Paul Smith from Red Hat, and if you want to learn more from the open source leader, check us out at redhat.com/virtualize.
How is the U.S. Citizens and Immigration Services enhancing its outreach and becoming more customer-centric? What is USCIS doing to ensure the integrity of the U.S. immigration system? And how is USCIS taking the immigration system into the 21st century? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these questions and much more with Alejandro Mayorkas, Director of the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, on the next Business of Government Hour.
The Federal News Radio Community Spotlight for May is the Susan G. Komen Global Race for the Cure, happening Saturday, June 4th on the National Mall. Whether you run, walk, or in the case of our WTOP colleagues, sleep, we can help end breast cancer forever. Join WTOP as they sleep in for the cure. Fight breast cancer without leaving your bed. Donate today at WTOP.com, search sleep. This message brought to you by Papa John's and Federal News Radio.
You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It is the Federal News Countdown this week. In studio with me, Bob Otto of Agilex and John Salamone of Federal Management Partners. And the number one story of the week is pretty much, very similar from each of you. Bob, your story number one is from GovExec. It's a story called Paying for It that has to do with a lot of pay and benefits issues. And John, your story number one is from The Post, and the headline is Federal Worker Pensions Emerge as Target in Debt Reduction Talks. I mentioned earlier about our bill tracker, and I showed it to you guys during the break. It's pretty much a chart that lists all of the pieces of legislation that are pending in Congress that affect your pay and benefits, and a description of the bill, a link to the bill so you can read the text of it, who's sponsoring it to give you an idea of who's behind some of these things, and then the status of it, where it stands. But I have to be honest, as I showed it to you guys and I scrolled down through, I had forgotten how many there are. There are like literally 30 or 35 pieces of legislation that we have on the bill tracker right now that affect pay and benefits. And you got to believe at some point, some of those are going to go through. Yeah, some of them are going to make it. Just if no other reason than, you know, you throw a bucket of paint at the wall, some of it will stick at some point, don't you think, John?
Yeah, and I think, you know, if you look at historical, how many bills get introduced in Congress and how many actually become enacted in law, it's somewhere between 4 and 7% if you look over the last, you know, maybe 10 to 15 years. But with all of the talk and all of this, it's just never ending. You have to anticipate that at least one of these bills is going to go through, and it's just going to depend on political pressure. It's going to depend on the administration's ability to educate Congress on what they think will happen, the negative impact is going to happen. So I think it's just one of those things we just have to continue to be mindful of and watch, keep a watchful eye. I was not aware of your bill tracker, so I think it's an excellent resource for your listeners. I'm definitely going to bookmark it.
I thought it was pretty cool. Who built it?
Jolie Lee, Julia Ziegler, and Suzanne Kubota, our web team, put the bill tracker together, and they feed it on a regular basis. The site says that it was updated just yesterday.
Maybe you should tell Congress they should go to it.
Well, I'm going to plug them. Yeah, they should get plugged into this. We're almost out of time, so got 30 seconds, John. Where do you think all of this is headed? Is there a silver lining in some of the clouds that we've talked about?
I hope so, and I think this is not unfamiliar territory. I mean, these are issues that we've dealt with in the past. Let's look at how they've been dealt with in a reasonable manner, and let's just be thoughtful about the way that we're thinking from now on.
Bob Otto, closing thoughts?
You know, federal workers provide great services across this country. I can name hundreds of things that they've done really great. And, you know, in all honesty, you got to look at everything in the budget. But I just think that they're a focus that's sort of symbolic, and the cuts really won't make that much difference.
Gentlemen, if this was the last Federal News Countdown, then we went out in style. You did a fantastic job. You chose great stories, and it was a pleasure to have both of you here. Bob Otto from Agilex, great to see you again. John Salamone, Federal Management Partners, thank you both for being on the show today.
Thank you.
It is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. You can find all of the stories that we counted down on today's Federal News Countdown at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Coming up on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. DOD and the Department of Veterans Affairs making one member of Congress very unhappy. You'll hear from her next on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.